Going On, A Sleepy Hollow Story, written by Motadit and read by Calicuria, as a gift for Annalie Sotem. Once upon a time, there lived a pretty princess in a small village. Did the princess have long flowing hair and red lips? No. Her hair was done in cornrows and her lips were brown. Shush! Listen to the story. 1. Ichabod is tangled in the lights again. Abby purses her lips as she sits at the table watching him, trying to hide her smile. Jenny doesn't try. She sits perched atop a strongbox, sipping her beer, and chuckles openly at her friend as he wrestles with the Christmas decorations. She gets a huffy glare for her trouble.
"Are you quite sure?"
Ichabod asks, for maybe the 17th time.
"That this bundle of lights isn't supposed to be deposited atop the tree as is?"
He tosses his hair out of his eyes as he fights against a particularly stubborn knot in the tangles.
"It would look quite fetching, don't you think?"
"No," Abby drawls, folding her arms and leaning back. The low light cradles around the little cabin, illuminating Ichabod at his work. "I'm pretty sure they're supposed to be strung out around the tree, like every other normal human being does at Christmas."
"Like we know anything about normal Christmases,"
Jenny snorts. Abby glances at her. Then, deciding she's not in the mood for it, she gives a shrug that's halfway between "so what?" and "true enough," before continuing. "Besides, Crane, I'm pretty sure both of us offered to help you with that." She waves a lazy hand at the "that." Ichabod is crouched before a half-assembled faux fir tree, with a small box of bells and orbs at his right, and tinsel on his left. The lights that he's attempting to wrangle are sort of everywhere, but mostly they're making ridiculous sleeves up and down his arms.
"Absolutely not," he insists.
He looks like he might be contemplating biting through the wires.
"You were both kind enough to bring all the traditional accoutrements of a 21st century Christmas to my humble home and make ready my hearth with cheer. The very least I can do is help bring in the season by braving these..."
Ichabod checks the packaging.
"Battery-operated festive lights and mounting this... tree."
He'd been appalled to find that it was fake, but it hadn't decreased his determined holiday verve in the slightest. Abby's pretty sure she's going to have to go over there and take over pretty soon, but for now, she's content to watch. Entertainment is hard to come by up here at the cabin. Out of the corner of her eye, she sees Jenny tip back the rest of her beer, then get up to head to the kitchenette. On her way there, she stops to squint at the fireplace. "Is there a stocking with my name embroidered on it tacked up there?" This is apparently interesting enough for Ichabod to look up again.
"I am glad to see that I am not the only one confused by gigantic hosiery."
Abby shakes her head, leaning back in her chair. Jenny's brows are drawn in that intense way she has, and her hair falls in curls around her shoulders like a shield. "Don't call in the emergency services yet," Abby says, arms folded across her stomach. "I was getting Ichabod one, and there was this deal that I could get 3 for the price of 1. Seemed scroogey to pass up on it. And since we'd agreed we'd be keeping Crane company for the holiday, this seemed like the place to put them." Jenny's eyebrows dip further down, and Abby feels her lips thinning out. "It's more than a week until Christmas. You've got plenty of time to take it down if you want," she says. "No, it's fine." For a moment, Abby thinks Jenny's about to say more, but she doesn't, and only walks out of the room in soft-soled feet, her hair catching and tossing light. The princess lived in a sun-soaked land in a time of plenty. Her village was small, and she knew all the people in it. The farmers pulling up cassava and potatoes, the seamstresses making dresses out of bright patterns, the priests and priestesses in their wooden huts with their oils and incenses, and the midnight crusaders most of all, holding great gatherings every night to pass on the stories of their land, to make sure they were kept within the hearts and hands of every person, especially the princess, who loved and was loved by all, and held all stories dear. "What's cassava?" "I think it's some kind of root. You can eat it. Were you listening to everything else?" "Yes?"
"Want me to read it again anyway?"
Yes.
Two. They don't talk about the fact that it's their first Christmas together in years. Instead, Abby spies Jenny at the supermarket, staring down a selection of canned goods. Her hood's down, her hair is in a tangled ponytail, and her shoulders are squared out in the defiance she usually saves for authority figures. It reminds Abby of a teenage Jenny, chin up and oozing desperation and contempt at the skeptical detective in the interrogation room. The thought is like a small fist, striking at the cage of her ribs. The memory is not a good one. She rolls her card up and hip-checks her sister. Hey! Jenny looks surprised for a moment, then resigned. She cocks her hip like a gun. So much for giving you assist with your Christmas grocery shopping. Decision apparently made, she scoops several tins of ravioli into her basket. Abby peers in. There's nothing much else in there other than a ham, a bottle of cheap wine, and some granola bars. Jenny catches her watching, and shrugs as she continues down the aisle. Abby raises her brows, her thank you lodged somewhere in her throat. Unexpected doesn't even begin to cover this. Well, she says, catching up, there's still all that cooking to help me with. She tries to shrug her brows, and she's pretty sure she ends up looking like an idiot more than anything. But Jenny laughs anyway, waving a hand. Oh no, don't even try. Oh, come on, don't be a baby. On impulse, Abby bumps her with her hip again. Despite being a year younger, Abby had always been the bigger one when they were growing up. A little chubbier, a little taller. That all changed when Jenny hit her last growth spurt in their teens, and Abby has been looking up at her ever since. The little hip check doesn't even make her budge, and her little smile encourages Abby to try one as well. I'm a decent cook, you're a decent cook. Crane can probably manage a stove without setting himself on fire. Together we could probably put together an okay meal. Like, you know. She doesn't finish that sentence, though Jenny's eyes tell her she knows what it was going to be. Most of the last several Christmases she'd spent either with Luke or with Corbin and his family. She'd never thought about what Jenny had done with hers, but now that her relationship with Corbin is out in the open, it could have been anything. Artifact hunting in Jamaica, freedom fighting in Serbia, dinner at his house. There's so many missing years between them, and an entire half left to be told. Jenny blinks down at her. She lets out a breath like a little hurricane, smiling just so. Look at both of us, would you? She says, putting in effort in everything. Best place to start, seems like. Abby replies carefully. Jenny is silent for a moment before she nods and begins walking again, moving and taking the sphere of her world with her. Abby jogs a little to catch up once again, and they fall in step. And held all stories dear. One night, the princess dreamed. She dreamed a lot about the stories she had heard and the histories that she had been told, but this dream was different. The princess dreamed in red. She saw great drought and destruction coming to her land, a famine wherein many people died, and a strange coldness that made all the life drain from the countryside. That was the scariest part. It was never cold where they lived. You're not even reading from the book anymore! Because I know it by heart already, and I gotta tell you the short version anyway. Come on, you're the one who wanted the story. Stop butting in. Okay. Okay. When she woke up, the princess tried to tell all her friends and subjects what she had dreamt, but none of them believed that it could really come true. They sympathized with her and soothed her, but no one would take any precautions. Even the priests and priestesses, who were always careful and suspicious, always heedful of signs, didn't think much of it. The princess, saddened by their disbelief and depressed by the future that she saw coming, began to withdraw from the community and her friends. She no longer went out among the people, no longer told their stories and spread happiness among them. And then one day, a prince came. 3. Don't burn a hole in the ground.
Abby's clocking a pretty good speed, and Alma skids on her heels as she stops and backtracks to stick her head into the precinct's break room. Jenny is sitting on top of the counter, sipping from what looks like a hot cup of cocoa. Abby makes sure they're alone, before stepping in and closing the door. Seeing her sister in the police station fills her with a vague discomfort, like she needs to protect Jenny. She leans against the door, her body in the wood making a twofold barrier. "Irving wanted these files post-haste," she finds herself explaining. "And as much as I hate that word, he's been pretty good about accepting the whole monsters and demons and time travel are all real deal, so I'm trying to keep him on our side. Jenny, what are you doing here?" "Well, you just missed him," her sister replies, instead of answering the question. "He left to go pick up Macy and bring her back." Abby folds the files to her stomach, relaxes a little against the oak. Someone stuck a slightly tacky wreath up on it, but it's high enough that it barely grazes the top of her head. "Macy, isn't that his daughter?" "Yeah, her mom's got a thing and Irving's working, so I volunteered to make sure she doesn't go comatose with boredom." When Abby raises her brows, Jenny wrinkles hers. "What?" No, it's nothing." Abby shakes her head. "I guess it's a little surprising, I guess. You, a kid, the equivalent of babysitting, in a police station. You're kind of throwing me here. Hey, last week a snowman animated by an evil witch tried to decapitate you," Jenny reminds her, hiding her smirk behind her mug. "Stranger things and all," Baby says. "God, don't remind me," Abby begs, already grinning. "I've been trying to forget. No way there's room in my memory banks for the trauma of Frosty coming at me with a machete." Their laughter curls together like heat and smoke. Abby feels warm, comfortable. "Anyway," Jenny continues, "I like the kid. It'll be nice hanging out with her." She pauses for a moment before she digs into the pocket of her hoodie and pulls out a worn paperback that she tosses to Abby. "Happen to have this on me. Maybe she'll like it." Abby doesn't have to look at the book to know what it is. She catches and tosses it back without reading the cover. Her grin quiets to a smile. Jenny is almost an enigma to her, a stranger that gives her rooted feelings of déjà vu. To know that she can still know her in little ways is a comfort. "I can't say I know her, but I think she will." She waves and turns to go, but doesn't manage to do so before Jenny calls her back and pushes a fresh mug of cocoa into her hands. "Might as well be warm while you fight the good fight," she says, nudging her out of the break room, humming loudly over her thanks. Back at her desk, Abby finds Ichabod using her stapler to make patterns on a sheet of paper, which he immediately stows away when he sees her coming. She doesn't even take the time to chuckle at him. She deposits the files on her desk, sits opposite him, and takes a swallow of her drink. It's hot, and the homey taste bursts on her tongue on the way down. It's really good. She stares down at the marshmallows bobbing in it. "Lieutenant?" Ichabod asks. He rolls his chair closer. "Is Artemis?" "Nah." Her reply is met with a look teeming with skepticism, and it's a little weird, honestly, how quickly they've gotten so good at reading each other. She takes another sip of her drink and offers it to her friend, meeting his eyes. "Nothing, really. It's just... Jenny, I've known her longer than I've known anyone else alive, and she still manages to surprise me." Ichabod looks at her fondly. "It is in the nature of all human beings, I have found. This was a good surprise, I hope." "Yeah." Abby leans back into the arms of her chair. The nature of human beings. The prince came from a faraway land and was very handsome. He was immediately liked by all, and especially the princess. He cheered her up with tales of his homeland and the wonderful things to see and do there. It was all majestic and modern and new. Most of all, the prince believed the princess's dream of the slow death by spiritual starvation that would come to her land. He tried to help her convince her people, but they would believe him no more than they would her. Finally, When no other road seemed open to them, the prince asked for the princess's hand in marriage. He loved her, and if he could not save her entire village, then he would save her. She accepted immediately, and expected to leave for his homeland at once. However, he told her, there was a price. To pay for her passage across the seas to his land, she would have to give up her voice. It was a very serious price to pay, but the princess was so sad and so desperate to be with someone who believed her, she thought little of it and consulted no one when she made her final choice. She said yes.
4. As it turns out, the evil witch has a friend, as witches are wont to have. "That," Jenny grinds out, tying the last knot in the bandage, "was incredibly dumb, Abby." The slice and swoop of dozens of thin wings beat in the air, and Abby keeps her firearm cocked and loaded, even as she grits her teeth through the pain. The gash that she'd gotten on her leg isn't deep, but it's enough to make walking a huge problem. A problem that can go on their ever-growing list, just beneath running out of magic ammo, and vengeful warlock and his minions closing in, and arrival of cavalry looking doubtful. Abby doesn't look at her sister. She keeps her eyes locked on the sky as she pulls off another shot. Another one of the flying creatures goes down, not 20 feet from the headstone behind which they've found cover, blue light spidering through its black, twitching body. Steam hisses and rises from the light dusting of snow on the ground. "Thanks for the reminder," Abby snaps calmly. "I didn't quite catch it the first 27 times. What was I supposed to do? Let the ugly demon spawn get the drop on you?" "You were supposed to not get hurt," Jenny retorts, "and maybe trust that I could handle myself."
"Jenny, please." Abby readies her weapon again. She can hear the warlock yelling out taunts in the distance, and more of his underlings approach by air. They're huge, with pointed teeth and ears, and have the benefit of a keen sense of smell to make up for their blindness. Abby's not sure how long the stuff Jenny slathered them with will work to mask their scent, but she's pretty sure it won't be long enough.
"Can we maybe do this another time? Maybe when we're not literally fighting back hell?"
"I'm just saying." Jenny checks her work on the bandage, seems to think it's satisfactory, and then draws her weapon closer.
"Maybe this would go a little easier if you had a little more faith in me."
"Of course I have faith in you, Jenny."
It's a hiss, barely a whisper, and Abby's eyes are marking the sky, but she can tell that Jenny hears her, from the way she pauses in reloading her guns.
"I realize I've done a crap job of showing that in the past, but this is now."
She glances across, just a flick of her eyes, at Jenny's dirty profile and hard expression.
"I'm going to do better," she wants to say.
But somehow, the words metamorphose on their way to the flat of her tongue.
"You're my sister."
The silence holds for a minute. Their breathing marks the time. Then Jenny slams in a magazine.
"Hell of a way to spend a Christmas Eve Eve,"
she says, not making eye contact. "But at least we've got the family thing down, right?" A little lightness pervades her voice, and Abby's smile is wry. That was pretty much an apology.
"Right."
Jenny takes aim, and another of the bat-like monsters goes down. The suppressors on their guns take care of muffling the noise of their shots. But still, it's not going to be long before they're found, even in this labyrinth of a cemetery.
"I've definitely had worse Christmas Eve Eves," Abby says, not wanting to stop talking.
"Like that time a robbery went wrong and put you in the hospital until Boxing Day?" Abby blinks, then laughs softly.
"Corbin, huh?"
"Corbin," Jenny confirms. She's smiling gently as well.
"I was away when it happened, but it was on the news, and he sent me some pictures of that great medal you got."
"Good," Abby laughs, feeling fond. "Kept up with me, huh?"
"Yeah, I kept up with you."
Abby looks away from the sky to give her sister a grin, and at that moment, the roar of an engine cuts across the stone-studded field. Abby tries to crane her neck to see, but it's Jenny who looks over the headstone and gives a sigh of relief.
The creatures in the air give a resounding shriek as one, as if they too know that something is happening. "Okay, good news," Jenny says, holstering one of her guns and sliding into action with the ease of training and calm. "It's everyone's favorite stitch in time. Bad news, it looks like he's bringing company with him. We've got 5 minutes, maybe less." Before Abby can comment or protest, Jenny is stooping in front of her and scooping her into her arms. She sees it coming and knows there's no time to object, but she can't help but roll her eyes just a little. "Really? What? We've been here before." As Jenny stands, the truck rumbles wildly to a stop a few feet away. The creatures are still circling in the air, their master's cries not far off, but some of them have started to swoop in and out with the scent of new blood. "I do think I'm getting a knack for this," Ichabod says as he exits the front seat and opens up the back. He has a shotgun in one hand and looks like he's been through just about as much hell as they have. Abby has never been gladder to see him.
"My sincerest apologies, Lieutenant, Miss Mills."
"We can hug it out later, Crane," she says wryly, one arm hooked around her sister's neck, the other holding onto her gun.
"Do you need any—"
"Nah, no worries," Jenny interrupts him before he can finish, sliding Abby into the back seat. "She ain't heavy, she's—" "Don't you dare!" Abby mock growls as she looks out of the window, checking on their enemy's progress. She can hear Jenny laughing as she gets in at the driver's side, and as Ichabod quickly darts around the truck to the passenger seat.
"Something I should know?"
he asks, glancing between them both as Jenny lurches the truck to a start. They're both still grinning. "We'll explain later." The journey was long and hard and took them over land and sea, but then at last they came to the prince's kingdom. The princess could not speak, but she was welcomed with joy and fascination, and she did her best to show how much she appreciated being there. The wedding was to take place in a few weeks, and in the meantime, many came from all over the kingdom to marvel at her. She enjoyed this, but also, she couldn't respond to any of their praise, and her prince had to do so in her place. Everything that she might have had to say, he said for her. New food, new clothes, and new friends. He saw that she had them all. When people wanted to hear stories of her homeland, her prince told them. Only he changed details constantly, told lies big and small, and made her sunny little faraway village seem like a joke, a simple culture full of simple people. She had not just given up her voice, she had given it to him. The princess was devastated. She never imagined he would do something like that.
"I did."
"That's good, Abby." The princess could not correct him or confront him or convince others that he was not telling the truth. Her voice was not her own. She had to watch him spread lies about her homeland and her people. And with each passing day, she felt herself becoming sicker and sicker inside, and somehow knew that the destruction she had seen in her village was also coming to pass, and knew that it was because of her. The new land that had at first enchanted her seemed to be poisoning her more and more every day. The prince barely spoke to her anymore, and the wedding was postponed. The princess looked high and low for a healer from her part of the world, and when she found one, the results were somber, but enlightening. The old woman held her hands, linking them as if they were kin. When she let go, her words were simple, but fell with the weight of an entire world. "The half has never been told," she said. 5. Jenny has been fully moved in for weeks now, but Abby's apartment still looks as if it only houses one person. She limps out of the kitchen and sinks into her favorite chair, reminding herself to pester Jenny into opening up that box of mementos that she keeps in her room and scatter bits of herself along the walls. It's where she belongs. Her apartment smells, she supposes Christmassy is the only word for it. Ichabod is puttering about in the kitchen, brewing a pot of what he swears is an actually traditional Christmas drink. Abby's not sure what it is, but the scent of cinnamon and clove and allspice is in the air. Nat King Cole is seeping from her stereo, and Ichabod is humming an old song that goes surprisingly well with the melody. Abby sips her eggnog. She doesn't actually like it very much, but it's Christmas Eve, and she figures she has to have a glass. The front door opens and shuts, just as she's contemplating how to get the ottoman within leg distance without actually having to get up. Ginny calls out a greeting to Ichabod, and then stomps into the living room, bringing in a lingering gust of cold air. She nods hello to Abby, but the first thing she does is head over to the mantelpiece. There, she takes three stockings out of her knapsack and hangs them up one by one. Abby's eyes widen briefly, and she feels a little ball of warmth and amusement curling to life in her stomach. Jenny catches her eye. I figured, you know, since we'll be here for the holiday instead, I shouldn't let your goodwill go to waste. What? Abby raises a palm. I didn't say anything. Jenny squints at her, but makes no further reply as she adjusts the placement of the stockings. On her way over to the chair next to Abby's, she kicks the ottoman closer to her sister. Abby grins, and balances her eggnog on the armrest of her chair so she can lift her legs onto the ottoman. Thanks. Jenny nods, and steals her mug to take a sip. She makes a face. This really doesn't taste that great. It doesn't, but, you know, it's a regular thing. One of those traditions. Well, Jenny gives, handing the mug back over. We don't do regular that well, and we can make our own traditions. Right? Abby smiles. Jenny's face looks pinched and a little redder for the cold, but it's slowly thawing into the lines and angles that she's been looking at ever since she was a little girl. Right. Jenny rests a hand briefly on her back and gets up to go to the kitchen. When she returns, it's with a can of beer and a promise from Ichabod that he'll be done within the next few minutes. Hey, I've been meaning to ask you. Abby begins, as Jenny settles into her chair again. Yeah? Abby cups her chin in the palm of one of her hands. You've never really talked about it. All that time you spent abroad, I mean, doing things for Corbin, for yourself, I don't know anything about it. Jenny swallows her mouthful, slowly lowering her hand. She looks thoughtful. I guess I haven't. I didn't really think you'd be interested. Well, I am, Abby insists, and as she says it, she hears how the truth of it stretches silver and gold between them. Their family, what they have should be whole. I want to hear you tell it. Really? Jenny looks surprised and pleased, and for a moment, the harshness of her face eases out with warmth. Abby feels good to know that she made it so. Yeah, you're a good storyteller. You always have been. Jenny leans back in her chair, smiling. Sitting in the armchairs, they're almost level with each other. But in her mind's eye, Abby sees herself sitting on a dusty floor, chubby face cupped in her hands, looking up at her big sister. She grins. Okay, Jenny says. I guess I can tell you a story.
What happened then? What's the half? Did she get her voice back?
You asked too many questions. It's late. I should probably finish this up tomorrow.
No, come on! I really want to know!
Okay, I'll tell you what. See if you can guess. What do you think the princess had to do?
Oh, her country! I bet she had to go back home!
Wow, you got it right on the first try. But that's right, kiddo. Leaving home taught her a lot of stuff, but her home is where she had her real friends, where she told and heard her first stories. She has to hear a lot of tales and sing a lot of songs, but that's the first thing she's got to do. Find a way to get back home. Thanks for listening.